Let's go. Welcome, survivors. Our last talk of this session, the morning session, is Subverting the Ideology of Standardization with Language Technology by Atticus Harrigan, Jordan Loeffler, and Nancy Arpe, and our presenter is Atticus Harrigan.
That's me. So thanks everybody for coming, first of all, to the last of the talks. Hopefully you'll stick with me before the lunchtime plenary that we have coming up.
Microphone?
Okay. Is this better? Okay, there we go. Okay, so today we're going to talk about standardization, and, or rather, the lack thereof. So I'll talk a little bit about orthography, standardization, pluricentrism, which is sort of a central concept to what we're doing. And we'll talk about standardization, particularly with orthography. And then I'll talk about how we subvert this. So in general, orthographies lend themselves well to standardization. It's not always the case, and it's possible to have multiple standards that coexist at the same time, and this is what we mean by pluricentrism. In the case of indigenous languages of North America, many of these have some sort of standard that is more or less agreed upon, but there are a lot of sort of fuzzy details in particularities, and some people will ignore them entirely. Monocentric standards necessarily privilege one variety over another, and so this is the case particularly in a language like, let's say, French, where there is a standard codified way to write things. They have an academy that is variously useless, and they sort of tell people how to do things. Minority language groups often, as a result, don't particularly like this. They can start to learn to resent it. It's not always the case. There are Swedes, for example, and Finns who have no problem with taking a different standard than the one that they necessarily speak. But in particular, in North American contexts, where I primarily work, this is sort of something that we've seen. We hear communities say, well, that's not the way we do it. We want to do it a different way. That's the way that they do it over there. And it sort of harks back to this concept of a pan-Indigenous approach, which in Canada is taking a lot of flack right now because we're starting to realize that these people are, the Indigenous people of Canada are not one homogenous group. And so even among, for example, the Plains Cree, people can have differing ideas about how to write things. And there's also certain standards that have particular significances, even in pluricentric situations. So you can see the use of one orthography sort of being considered more proper, more educated than others. And I believe this is the case actually in Serbian, where they have a Cyrillic alphabet and a Roman alphabet. And there's sort of a power that comes with writing in Cyrillic. So in Plains Cree, we have a situation, it's a language spoken in Canada, in Western Canada in particular, but we have a situation where we have this nomoya, this word, it means no, and originally I had a bunch of screenshots with blacked out names of people from a Facebook group, but that felt really weird, so I decided to get rid of that entirely. But these are all ways that I've seen this nomoya spelled, and it's pretty common for this na to get away, and you could say that moya just like that is fine in the way it is, and as a word, but I think it doesn't really matter. The point is, we can see these three different spellings, and there were people defending that these are the way they are spelled, not a way to spell them, but their way to spell them. Similarly, this term namwats, you're getting people writing mwots, moch, moats, these varying ways that you could probably, if you were speaking to someone, you could recover what they're saying pretty easily. You'd like map all of these onto this word, or again, take off that NA. And it wouldn't really be a problem. And yet in writing, many people might see this and say, well, that's not the right way to write Cree. We don't have double consonants like that, or we don't have CHs. Similarly, in the term Namakigwai, which when I say it, it does sort of sound like I'm saying G's, which intervocalic K's, it's not super surprising. And so it'll be written this way. I point this out because we have these vowel markings that mark long vowels. People will often ignore these for various reasons. I think probably the most common one is that it's a pain in the butt to write on a North American keyboard, unless you know what you're doing. But then we'll also get this U used for a short A, G's instead of K's. And then this was one that I was really surprised by, but egatete, we had one person write wegatete like this. And they more or less sound the same, but none of these are the standard Roman orthography that's sort of been codified in Cree. So this is sort of where we get into this pluricentrism. It's where you have multiple interacting and in some cases competing standards without one being necessarily authoritative over the other. So examples of this that people might be familiar with is Norwegian, where you have Bokmål and Nynorsk, which are both written standards. I believe Bokmål in that case actually is the preferred in about 85% of cases. People prefer Bokmål over Nynorsk, but there are multiple standards that are accepted by the communities. One is not necessarily right or wrong. In English, we have this as well. And I'll show you a bit, but for example, on this Scottish Twitterverse, for example, things are spelled in a particular way. It's not just willy-nilly. There are set ways to spell things that differ from something like standard American English. And then in Chinese, I mean, it's an interesting situation because you've got a bunch of different diglossic situations where you have a bunch of languages that are all written in Mandarin. But for Indigenous languages of Canada, ones that I'm going to point out here today, I'm going to focus on Plains Cree or Nehiyawewin. And then there's also Haadkil, which is Northern Haida, which I'll touch on a bit as well. So in Plains Cree, we have the standard Roman orthography, and this is probably the standard way to write Eatoskeyan. And yet I've seen every single one of these. And there's more divergent ways to write this. Like I said, with the T, you could probably write that as a D. I don't think that would be surprising to anyone. But on top of that, we also have another writing system, a syllabic writing system, which also has different, sometimes people will use spaces, sometimes people won't use spaces. It's rare, but sometimes you'll see people put like a character that represents an H or some sort of aspiration in there. And in general, when you have a short I that's word internal, that'll just disappear. People will either write it with the word without it, or they'll write it with this sort of apostrophe indicating that it's, quote, elided, which I know in the audience Eric is a big fan of. So the other thing is stops are always, in the SRO, stops are always written as voiceless, even when they are voiced intervocalically. And yet we saw in that previous example that something like kigwai, which, I mean, here it's actually spelled without the vowel lengths, is coming up as kigwai like that. In Haadkil, we have a situation where, I mean, not too long ago, they actually got together and decided how they were going to write their language. And in their wisdom, they decided underlines would be separate characters. And I mean, this is problematic because it's really hard to type an underline in a text message, for example, even though Unicode allows it, almost no keyboards do. I guess in a Word document, you can just underline that particular letter. But here we'll see too that the final consonant gets voiced or devoiced, and the underlining goes away. In the spelling of the definite noun suffix, we see A-A-Y, E-E, we see various accent marks, and in word boundary placement, we see here one long word or three words, and that's fairly common. And with polysynthetic languages, I think that's pretty understandable. So in particular, we can look at standardization with language technology, and there's this idea that language technology, you need a standard. You can't have people writing in every way, but we see pluricentric standards all, or pluricentric situations all the time. So here's something from a Scottish Twitter, where they're using this word canny, I mean, this te instead of the like the two. And I mean, I guess you could argue that this is Scots and not quite English, but I would disagree with you in this instance. And then you hear two saying eat good or mind your business instead of mind your business. And then I don't actually know if this is true, but it looks like Popeyes got in on this and wrote ya instead of you as well. And people can write like that, but the question is, what does language technology, things that are helping you write language, how does that treat it? And at least in the English cases, if I go to dictionary.com and look up canny, it tells me what it means. And it'll tell me, I think in this case it says that it's Scots, which I think is actually pretty decent. It's telling you it's a standard in a different area. When you look up Finna for like, I don't know how to use this properly, but it's essentially like I'm Finna go to school, basically, do that with my life. It's great. It tells you that it's slang, which is sort of problematic in and of itself, but at least the dictionary is coming up with something so that if you don't know it, you can figure out what it means. For Plains Cree, this isn't necessarily something that works super well. So we have this tanse with the I elided, and it's not coming up. And although that this is sort of an aberration before God to some people to write it like this, it is a way that people do write it. Similarly, if you write something, this is a different dictionary, but if we write kiguayoma, which is a phrase, it comes up with no results, despite, again, this is a very predictable, very often spelled way of doing this. Also, it uses Flash, which I think we could do without. It wants me to tap to the internet again. What I'm here to say is that language technology does not actually mean standardization in a monocentric concept. There are many computational formalisms that you can use to allow for input or output in particular standards, so that you can allow for multiple coexisting standards. What I'm going to talk about today is the finite state transducer. It sounds, when I first heard this, I thought I was going to be doing something really cool. But it's like the most simplest possible technology. It's basically two tape levels of if zero goes to one and vice versa. So you can put possibly context-sensitive rules. You can put non-context-sensitive rules as well. These are pretty easy to compute. I didn't really have any coding experience, and I learned it relatively quickly. And here's just a graph sort of showing if we wanted to allow for someone to write tanse without any vowel marking length or length markers, and to get rid of the I, this is sort of a visualization of a finite state transducer where the zero is a start state. It goes, it sees the letter T, it says, okay, well, in my lexicon, T always becomes T. It says, oh, well, actually, I recognize that A with a circumflex is the same thing as A without. N is always N. I, when there is a rule that specifies near an N and near an S, it goes to zero, which represents nothing. Then it picks up an I, which is always an I, when it's word final. And here's the actual code. This is all you would need to do something like that. Now, this only works for one word. And you can see I have something which says, like, A with circumflex goes to A, and I can say that always. There's always that mapping. This I goes to zero when between N and an S. This would be a terrible rule, of course, because there are lots of words where the context is different, but the point is that they're very simple, relatively human readable things that don't require a whole lot. And then this is just literally combining the two rules and the lexicon, which in this case only has tanse. You can also do this with different character sets. So here I say TA as a multi-character set will go to this symbol, NI goes to this symbol, SI goes to this symbol. This is the only thing I have in my lexicon, but we see this graph. I actually don't particularly like the way this graph did this. These are the ones that they give out, but basically it recognizes that these were together, so it does this and then deletes the A. And so then this has allowed us to basically have a easy automatic syllabic to Roman orthography transcription. So they work with any character set, or at least theoretically. Certain implementations might be hard, but for the most part, I think Unicode is pretty decently supported. They're extremely small in size. So an entire, I mean, I don't want to say the entire language because people have said that you can't do the entire language in a FST formalism, but a pretty comprehensive coverage for an entire language is in the orders of probably megabytes rather than gigabytes. They can be used in a variety of applications. So we've actually used this where we're coding, in addition to what you've seen there, we code morpheme sets with like morphological tags, and now you have a parser. And they're free and open source. There are sort of non-open source options, but FOMA, which is a pretty, I think, prolific and fantastic use case, is free and open source and well documented, which is rare. And I mean, this is one that I put in here in particular because at CompuTel we saw a lot of neural net based stuff. You don't, because these are rule based, you don't need a lot of training data. If you have good documentation, you could theoretically get a pretty decent coverage for your language. The only thing is you can use neural nets and larger data sets to sort of bootstrap and sort of get that extra few percent accuracy rates if you really wanted. So how do these help subvert the standard? I'm gonna talk about Itwewena, which is an intelligent Ne'ewayawin Cree dictionary. We also have something called Gusa, which is an intelligent Haadkiel dictionary. So Itwewena, this is sort of the interface that you get when you get there. You can choose what sort of orthography you want to use to search. You can choose the direction of searching that you want. So if you wanted to go from English to Plains Cree, you click swap. You got your normal menu stuff, and then up here you have interface options. So here we can choose that we want to use syllabics, for example. And using the FST, we can choose that. We also have the option just to do standard Roman orthography. That's what we've done here. So we've translated that there. And this is what it looks like in syllabics. It's happening sort of, I don't want to say on the fly, but sort of on the fly. And even though this is in syllabics, you can still write in Roman orthography here because we have that mapping. That's sort of 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 technically. So if we look up tanse with the apostrophe here, this elided I, we allow this, we give the sort of citation form in the standard Roman orthography. And then we have two things, and we have the dictionaries that they're coming from, and then we have a morphological analysis here. Of course, I chose something that isn't morphologically inflected, so it's not really interesting. We can also look up the example ki gua oma. We're using the G instead of a K, but because this has the rules, it can recognize that, doesn't care about the vowel lengths as well. We can also sort of do the worst possible case, which is where you want to write in multiple orthographies at once. I don't know why you would do this, but I guess it could be that sometimes the keyboards can be hard to type, and even though you try your best, it comes out looking like this, and it still recognizes this. This says, it more or less transcribes exactly to Kiguayoma. And then in terms of the morphological analysis, we have here full paradigms. We've got a breakdown of what a particular form, in this case Wapameo, means. We've got a basic paradigm here. We could go to a fuller linguistic paradigm. These get very long. And then we also have recordings here that you can listen to it on top of everything else. And here it is in syllabics. And here it is searching in syllabics as well. And so I'm not going to show Gusau, mostly for time constraints, and because it's sort of the same architecture, it looks very similar, but of course the Haida language is very different. So those things are going to be different. But basically the conclusion is that some languages are pluricentric, and that technology is agnostic. You can use technology to enforce a standard, and spell checkers and things like that are very good at it. And we sort of have, when we allow like these forms that are sort of written wrong, like Higuayoma, like that, we are giving a very particular citation form. We're not showing it without the macrons or the circumflexes like people are inputting it. And there's a very specific reason for that that I won't really go into here. But the point is the technology is agnostic and it can be used to enrich linguistic diversity even within languages. So it can be used to support multiple standards. And so the idea that something cannot use a particular language with technology because it shouldn't be written because there are multiple standards, which I've heard this literal line of reasoning, that's not necessarily the case. And there's still lots of good reasons to not write something. But with technology, we have the ability to support multiple language standards without necessarily privileging one group or one person over another. So here are my references, and here I have a very good example of pluricentrism. Thank you very much.
About 8-9 minutes for questions.
Yeah.
Can you go the other way?
Yep.
Can you go from standard to, can it learn funny ways of writing and then produce that?
Yeah. So with FSTs in particular, those are always two level. Well, there was one instance where it wasn't, but that was actually pretty impressive. They're supposed to always be two level by default. So if you can go one way, you can go the other way, no problem.
Ante. I should add to that. You can work these rules that sort of try to see how there are different ways of how something could be written. You can actually work the other way. But when you do that, starting from one single form, you might get sort of actually tens, if not hundreds, of ways in which that form could be written in different ways.
Well, I've always told people, if you don't like the way I write it, your language, then show me how you write it, and I'll learn your way. So I'd like a machine that does it too.
Yeah.
And you can learn those. Yeah.
Can you go back to your references slide?
Okay.
Thank you.
So if I could add to that point, so we haven't done this yet. I work with these people, but you can have the FSTs that have weights, so you can see how often, person writes G in this context, person writes K in this context. We haven't done it at all, but it is possible. So we can go from the standardized form, which is internal to the FST, back to the descriptive form.
And with the dictionary in particular, you know, when people are typing in searches, we're keeping a record of those searches. So we can see what errors, what deviations people make the most.
Yeah, and that actually was in a sense that we saw people searching with syllabics with the standard morphology setting on top. So that was one of the reasons why we actually implemented that. You could type in using any of the orthographies, you can choose then what is the output orthography. If you want, but as input, you could actually sort of combine any even the same string in terms of syllabics and SRO with macros and circles, and yet be able to recognize what you're searching.
Further question?